So I'm going to hand over to Philly now. And Philly, as I say, is the program manager for the Dementia Without Walls program within the Joseph Rowntree Foundation. So I'd like everybody to welcome Philly. Thank you.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's fantastic to be here this morning. We're all really delighted to be in Dublin and on a sunny day. What could be better? As Elaine has said, our aim in coming here today is really to share our learning in a two-way process. I've just been speaking with a few of you this morning over the scones and cream and jam, which is always a good start. And it's really clear to me that we share so much common ground and we're all on the same journey. None of us know the answers. We're all learning and building evidence and experience. So it is very much a two-way process. And we're very impressed with what Genio is doing around Ireland, what all of you are doing and how you're contributing. I'm going to introduce my colleagues here again. So this is Rachel Litherland. Rachel works for a small company called Innovations in Dementia, and they're one of our key partners in our programme Dementia Without Walls, which I'll tell you a bit more about in a minute. I'm conscious that all of you over there can't actually see the people here, so that might be a bit tricky for you, but you can always stand up or whatever if you want. Yes, you could stand up for a minute just so they can see you. Could you? So the one in the middle in green is Catherine Blaker. She works with me at JRF and she's our community development manager, and she's particularly going to talk about the work that we're doing within our organisation to try and become a dementia-friendly organisation. And she will also chip in with the bits about the work in York as well, as we're based in York. Finally, there's Cathy Henwood, who works for the Alzheimer's Society in Bradford, and JRF with Bradford Council are supporting an important dementia-friendly project to try and help Bradford City become a dementia-friendly place. And throughout the day, we're going to be hearing from each of my colleagues. But what we want to do, and why we're all sitting up at the front, is we want to all be chipping in, because there is so much overlap and so much connection between all our pieces of work that actually we're often involved in joint pieces of work together. We want to keep, there's a lot of you, and that's absolutely fantastic, but we want to keep the day as informal as possible. So scattered throughout our bits of talking, there will be clips of films and things that we're going to ask you to do, or just turn to your neighbour and talk about. So it's not just going to be talking out throughout the day. And also, if you want to interrupt, just raise your hand and we'll try not to completely lose the thread of what we're saying, but do feel that you can do that, especially if we use terminology that isn't necessarily familiar to you here, which is quite likely to be the case. So I'm going to start by giving a little bit of an overview of our current programme of work. Before I do that, I'm going to just tell you a little bit about who Joseph Rowntree was, because I think that's quite a bit of important background. So Joseph Rowntree was a Victorian businessman who lived and worked in York, and he set up a cocoa factory and became very successful and made lots and lots of money. He very soon became aware that the workers in his cocoa factory were living in quite awful conditions, some of them, in the slums of York. And being a Quaker, he was very concerned about social issues. So just as we would all do, he went and built a village for his staff, a garden village called New Earswick, which is 4 miles outside of York, and which still is very much exists and flourishes. The village had gardens for every worker, sanitation, a fruit tree, their own bit of garden, completely different to what they'd been living in before. In 1904, the Joseph Rowntree Foundation was set up, so 110 years ago now. It was then known as the Village Trust, and its aim was to manage all the housing in the village of New Earswick. But also developed some of the interests of Joseph Rowntree. He was very keen to use his money to tackle the root causes of social problems rather than just the symptoms. And so the foundation gradually took on a policy and research focus, And we now spend the interest from Joseph Rowtree's endowment on that work that we do. It's currently about 10 million a year, but obviously it goes up and quite often down as the stock market or various crises hit the financial world. We have three themes of work: poverty, place, and an ageing society. And our programme Dementia Without Walls fits into our work about an ageing society. I'm telling you all this because I think the background is quite helpful, and I wanted to show that one of the unique points about our organisation is that not only are we a policy and research organisation, and a fairly influential one in the UK at least, but also because we manage our own housing stock still, we have our own housing association, we have a number of care homes, we have a retirement village, we have some extra care schemes and lots of sheltered housing. Ageing and dementia are very real and live issues for many of our colleagues who are actually providing care and housing. So it's really important to us that those of our residents who are affected by dementia have a good quality of life. So moving on to our programme, this is the tree that represents our programme, which is called Dementia Without Walls. First of all, why did JRF decide to run a programme about dementia? Well, I think there are two main reasons. First of all, we realised that people living with dementia in our society are among the most marginalised and least heard people in our society. And really, until a few years ago, it was very unusual to hear somebody who is affected by dementia themselves speaking about their needs, their experiences, or their wishes. So their voice is very unheard. It's still very unheard. And many people feel that they can speak for and about people with dementia without inviting them to have their own voice heard. And secondly, as I said, the second reason is that we are actually supporting practically many people affected by dementia in our own housing and care services. So really, we have a duty to ensure that we enable them to live as good lives as they possibly can. So it's a 3.5-year programme that we're running. We're halfway through it now. This phase will end at the end of 2015. And the overall aim of the programme is that the UK is a good place for those of us who have dementia to live and to live well. And the three main strands, represented by the three branches of the tree, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about each of those strands so you can see how all the programme fits together. Each of those leaves is one of our projects, or kind of one of the aspects of the programme. And we're using lots of different methods. We're using academic research, evaluations of demonstration projects, production of images and films and stories and case studies. We're using networks and events like today, all sorts of different ways of trying to both influence and inspire others to create a better world for people with dementia. As I say, Catherine and Cathy and Rachel will be speaking in much greater depth about particular aspects of this programme as we go on. And there's lots of overlap, so we'll all be chipping in. So moving on to the first strand, the first branch of the tree, and I've called that Thinking Differently About Dementia. And I think it's fair to say that we've all been brought up, we've all grown up in a society in which consciously or unconsciously we have accepted very negative stereotypes about the condition of dementia and the experience of living with dementia. And many of us, perhaps all of us at times, use language and images quite thoughtlessly, which actually reinforce this stereotype. We tend to talk about people as victims or sufferers. Occasionally you hear people still talking about dementia as a living death in which the real person has been completely lost. And this is something which actually is contradicted by the testimonies of many people who are living with dementia. I don't want you to think that I'm saying that anywhere, in any way, dementia is a great thing to have and we should all look forward to it. But many people who do have dementia are telling us that it is possible to live positively with the condition and to continue to make a real contribution to society. So through our programme, along with lots of other partners, we're really keen to challenge those attitudes, language and images, and people's understanding of and behaviours towards people who have dementia. And I've just put on the slide some examples of specific projects that we're supporting, which are trying to chip away at these attitudes and these perspectives of dementia. We've got one which is asking the question, is dementia a feminist issue? Which I think is a really interesting challenge, given that most people who have dementia are women, most informal carers are women, and most paid carers are women. And that's got to have an effect on women themselves, but also, well, we are asking the open question, does that affect how society treats, funds, supports the whole issue of dementia? That's been carried out by Innovations in Dementia and the University of York together. We've got another project called What is Truth, rather grandly, which is an inquiry which is being run by the Mental Health Foundation for the next 18 months. And that's looking at some of the more disturbing and difficult aspects of dementia that people experience, things like confusion and delirium, hallucinations and delusions. And that inquiry is speaking to a lot of experts, including people with dementia and carers, to ask them whether we can look at those experiences as something more meaningful and not just as negative symptoms that have to be controlled. Again, it's an open question. I don't know what will come from it, but it's a really interesting one. Thirdly, I've mentioned public attitudes already, and we're funding a module in the forthcoming Scottish Social Attitudes Survey, which it interviews over 1,000 people in depth, face-to-face interviews. And we're going to be asking 40 new questions to try and get a better understanding of the public's awareness and understanding of dementia. And we're funding that with the Life Changes Trust. I've mentioned films and images. And again, throughout the programme, we're producing short films and positive images to try and keep reinforcing this idea that actually people have a lot to give, even following a diagnosis of dementia. And finally, I've mentioned our resource hub, which is on our website, jrf.org.uk, where we're building up a portal with lots of links, useful resources, specifically focusing not so much on care in a service kind of way, but on dementia-friendly communities and on the involvement of people. So I'd urge you to have a look at that. So on to the second branch of the tree. This one is called Inspiring Local Communities. And we're really conscious that the concept of dementia-friendly communities or dementia-supportive communities or dementia-accessible communities, whatever they're called, is something that really seems to have taken root across the UK and Ireland and Europe and beyond over the last few years. And it feels to us like this concept has a lot of potential, but there isn't a big evidence base. We're all learning as we're going along. And we really need to be testing out how much change can we really make within our communities? How much difference can we really make to the lives of people with dementia? So we're doing this, again, in a number of different ways. We're funding and supporting very specific projects in some geographical areas. For example, Bradford, and Cathy's going to be talking about that. We've also had a project running in York, which both myself and Catherine have been involved in. There's another project in Derry in Northern Ireland, and one just starting off in northeastern Scotland. And as well as supporting the demonstration aspects of the projects, the actual doing, we're also funding independent evaluations of the projects so that in the next year or so, we'll be able to report back on the learning. And the learning not only of what has worked well, but the learning of what hasn't worked so well, so that we're not all in reinventing the wheel all the time. In the meantime, we really want to bring our learning in a less formal way through to other people. And we produced a few months ago a report of case studies from Yorkshire, 20 case studies giving examples of what different people and organisations across Yorkshire, police people, theatres, museums, fire people, leisure people, all sorts of people and organisations are doing to try to become dementia friendly. So do have a look at that. We've also got a strand of the programme which is giving small grants to different projects to help encourage them to try out their ideas. We're doing that through the EFID network, which I'll mention in a minute, but also we're providing awards to small projects in York. And again, Catherine might be able to mention that at some point. We're very conscious that one of the issues within communities is a fear of risk. And people within communities sometimes feel that they can't actually encourage people to be out and about more or facilitate them to do things without a real worry that about the risks that involves. And that's a genuine fear, especially in this day and age with so many regulations. So again, the Mental Health Foundation is looking at this issue and is looking at how the concept of positive risk taking can maybe help us all in our work in dementia-friendly communities. And finally, on this strand, we're involved in a lot of different networks, which again helps us all to share the learning. We've just funded a network in Wales to support dementia-friendly communities across Wales as part of the Ageing Well programme. We're quite active in the Dementia Action Alliances in England, local ones in York and Bradford, the regional one in Yorkshire and Humber, and the national one. And that's a really good way, those alliances, of networking with other people, not only from health and care services, but also from big businesses, corporates, industries, big public services, to share ideas of what they can do, how they can play their part. We've also been involved on the Prime Minister's Champions Group. As you know, the Prime Minister in England launched his challenge in 2012, and dementia-friendly communities was one of the three parts of that challenge. And finally, EFID is a European Foundations network. We're one of five foundations involved. Another one is Atlantic Philanthropies, I'm sure you'll all be aware of in Ireland. And all of our five foundations have put some money into a pot to provide awards to projects all across Europe who are trying to help their communities become more dementia-friendly. And again, that's a really good way of sharing the learning in both directions. So there are projects from the UK, from Ireland, from Belgium and Germany, all of whom have done quite a lot of thinking about dementia-friendly communities, but also there have been awards for places like Bulgaria and Cyprus, which are much earlier stage. And then just on to the third branch of the tree, which is about strengthening voice. And our particular focus has been on strengthening the collective voice of people with dementia. And we are very aware that just in the last few years, there has been a sea change that is actually, I think, quite historically important, in that people with dementia are starting to get together to form their own groups and to take hold of the agenda and decide for themselves how they want to influence attitudes or services or policies. Now, this is all very new. Some of the groups, like the Scottish Dementia Working Group, are quite advanced. Others are at very early stages, but it's something that we want to help support and build capacity. I won't say any more about that because I know that Rachel is thinking, oh no, I was going to say that, so I'll move on from there. But we're also, in terms of strengthening voice and involvement, we're also trying to make sure that people with dementia are meaningfully involved in events that we're involved in. And it's great if they can actually be speakers or do presentations, but we also need to make sure that events work for people with dementia, that the venues are accessible and that they might have helped us to audit them. So if you go out of this room, do you know how to get to the loo? Is there a clear sign? When you come out of the loo, is there a clear sign back into this room? Some basic things like that. And that people with dementia feel comfortable at and able to contribute to events. So we've been working quite hard on that. We're very keen to think about particularly marginalised groups amongst those who have dementia, who are already marginalised. And we're funding some small project in Northern Ireland with the Alzheimer's Society and the British Deaf Association, which is working with people who are either born deaf or have acquired deafness and then have dementia, to engage with them and to help produce some resources which might help them. And we've also been doing some work in small parts of the country around lesbian, gay and bisexual people who have dementia or who may have dementia in the future, and also black and minority ethnic groups. And again, Kathy in particular will tell you, I'm sure, about the work with Asian communities in Bradford. Films and images, again, we're using those to try and demonstrate individuals and groups in influencing an active mode, rather than the usual film clips that we're all used to seeing of people with dementia sitting in a corner, powerless, useless, hopeless. Now, we're not saying that that doesn't happen, but we want to challenge that, and we want to show that actually with support, people can be much more engaged and make a much stronger contribution. And then finally on this strand, and really underpinning the whole programme, is working with people with dementia as our advisors in our programme. And we very quickly realised that it wouldn't work to have to expect people with dementia to join our committee meetings on a regular basis, to cope with all our strategic documents and our agendas and our minutes, and to maybe make a small contribution in a long and boring meeting. So we've been experimenting with different ways of involving people, some of which have really seem to have been very successful. In individual projects, all the individual projects we funded, I think there are people with dementia involved in every one of those projects, and not just as recipients of the project, but actively involved in designing them. In our films, as I've said, we've been making films, and people with dementia are not just the subjects of the films, but they actually helped us to write the brief for the films. They were involved in interviewing the filmmakers. As soon as the filmmaker was appointed, they insisted that they were going to give them a workshop about what it is like to have dementia, so that the filmmaker really understands now how he can best work with people with dementia. So it's trying all the time to actually do something meaningful rather than involve people tokenistically. And then Catherine will also mention how in the foundation we're involving people with dementia in our grant giving to different projects and in our internal work across the organisation. So that's the whole programme, that's the whole tree, and that's how it all fits together. As you can see, there's all sorts of different components. But actually, as you'll find out as we go along through the day, all those bits, and I'm going to mix my metaphors here, all the leaves are kind of interconnected somehow, probably down the three branches. And it's really quite difficult to talk about any of those things individually. Just a couple of more points before I hand over. I've mentioned as I've been going along the involvement of people with dementia in the programme, and throughout the day we're all going to be highlighting the different ways in which we've been working alongside with people with dementia to achieve really meaningful involvement. Here are some of the many people that have been involved in the programme, and I think for me, what this image does is really highlight the importance of working with people in a meaningful, a practical, and quite a speedy way. And I say speedy because actually people with dementia tell us that they often have a real sense of urgency to try and change the world a little bit to make it better for other people who have the condition. But they're also aware that they may well have quite a short window of opportunity. They may just have months or perhaps a year or 2 years in which they feel capable of making those contributions as speakers or trainers or as influencers in whatever way they want to do it. And that's highlighted for me by this picture. All these people are still really influencing me personally and the programme, but three of them have actually died since we started the programme 2 years ago. Which really does highlight the fact that, you know, you need to move at the pace of people with dementia, and it's no good inviting them onto a group that's going to meet every 3 or 4 months and maybe decide a little bit and then wait for another 3 or 4 months for the next agenda. You know, we really have to move at their pace. Throughout the day, we're going to be trying to highlight some of the things that we're learning as we go along. And I know that Elaine, at the end of the day, will be trying to pull all that together so that we come out with some of the key areas of learning amongst all of us, not just us at the front here. So to kind of kickstart that off and get you thinking, I've just listed a few of the things that I think I've been learning as we've been going along. And these are they. You won't be surprised to see involving people with dementia themselves is crucial. And that has had a huge impact on the way that we have been doing things. Secondly, I've talked about the networks and groups of people with dementia that are growing and starting to take root around the whole of Europe, in fact, and the importance that there is, that the importance of us helping to be aware of those groups or helping to nurture people and enable people to form those groups so that we can work with them in a meaningful way. We're also learning that there are lots of misconceptions still about dementia, and we all need to understand much better what it means to live with dementia. And the best way to do that is actually by hearing the voice of people with dementia themselves. Not that everybody has a shared experience or the same experience, but the more voices and the more perspectives we hear, the more nuanced will be our understanding. We're also learning this is about the whole community, and that actually we can all contribute. And I know from talking to people just before we started that many of you are starting to engage with businesses within the community as well as with health and care services. And we've got some great examples of how those elements of a community are making a difference. We're also learning, particularly from our work with dementia-friendly communities, that we need to start not by looking at everything that's bad about our community or the lack of funding or the poverty of services, but it's much more positive to look at the assets that every community has, whether that's a small organisation, a village, a town, a city. Think about the assets you have that you can build on to get some quick and easy gains, and that really helps to inspire positivity in everybody. There's a real appetite for information. I think we really are pushing at an open door. And again, just listening to a few people this morning, it was very clear that all the efforts that we're making to raise awareness are being generally very positively received. So we need to build on that. And finally, we're finding it really helpful to be part of different networks, formal large networks like the Dementia Action Alliance, but also smaller networks of people with similar interests or with similar goals. And I would count this event today as one of those. So I think it's really important that we use every method that we can to share our learning. Finally, I've just got a few quotes that I've pulled out of our programme work to date. And some of those are from people with dementia themselves and some by some of the activists or people within communities trying to make changes. I'll just give you a second to look at them. But essentially what they're doing is highlighting the importance of, in a sense, just starting to get on with it. It's a huge thing to achieve a dementia-friendly society, but all of us actually can make a contribution both in our professional lives and in our personal lives. And this is what today is all about. So thanks very much.
Thank you, Philly, and right on time. thank you for that whistle stop tour of the work that's been done in Joseph Rowntree Foundation. And I'm sure you'll all agree, it's a very busy place at the moment. So thank you for that. And I think what was particularly beneficial as well is, I suppose, getting that grasp of the underlying principles and all the work that's been undertaken in Joseph Rowntree Foundation.